Now I've got with me our private investigator, Peter, from Absolute Facts. How are you, Peter?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you, Alan. It sounds like one of those cases that the butler didn't do it.
Well, they already get shot. So. Peter, pardon me. Unfortunately, you couldn't be with us last month, so we did send you away with something, and it was to tell us the difference between or what a security guard can do as opposed to when a private investigator is actually in a store and looking at or trying to loss prevention. That's the word I'm trying to look at.
Okay, so I'll start off with security guards, who are often called bouncers, of course. So the point with them is they are privately employed citizens, so they're not members of the police force per se. And regardless of whether they have a uniform or badge, Alan, the law doesn't give them any special powers whatsoever. No. So security guards can kick you out of private property, probably should ask you to leave rather than kick you out, refuse you entry, or perform a citizen's arrest. Security guards can't.
Peter, can I just ask you, if they do perform a security, what was the word again? I've lost it.
Citizen's
arrest. Are they covered legally, or do they just have to take the risk?
Look, generally they'll have to take the risk, but I think they're looked upon favourably because the reason for them performing a citizen's arrest is either to do with violence or to do with theft. And they're not going to undertake a citizen's arrest if they're not confident that a theft, for argument's sake, has occurred, or for that matter, an assault.
Right. Yep. So if a private investigator's in the store, what's the difference?
None at all. A citizen's arrest is a citizen's arrest. In other words, any citizen can undertake an arrest if they dare do so. I suppose is the way to look at it. So I think we're reading newspaper articles now about people basically pinning offenders for various things to the ground until police arrive. That can and does happen. Whether or not it's advisable or fraught with danger or perhaps liability, that's another question. But you'd like to think that the common sense, or you know, the higher purpose would rule out any of that sort of repercussion. But there is an inherent risk.
Peter, you said that the security guard would be looked upon favourably because of the because of the training they've had and that. What about a private investigator? Is he looked upon just as with the same sort of thing, or do they look upon him as, you know, I don't know, I'm asking you.
Look, one of the things I've got written down here is people, the public in general, seem to believe that private investigators have an extra or a given ability when it comes to their powers of obtaining information, and that's not the case. The truth is the private investigators don't really have much more power than the average person, apart from legally being able to investigate a person or watch someone, which is obviously, as we refer to, as surveillance.
Yeah, and so it's not stalking, whereas if I did it, it'd be classified as stalking, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, that's where you have to be careful. So if you undertook too much surveillance, in inverted commas, then you could be liable for things like harassment and stalking.
Hang on, even as a private investigator?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You can be asked by police to tell them the reason why you're there in a location, or have been at a location consistently, perhaps, for a period of time.
Yep.
And theoretically, also, police have got the right to ask in specifically who you're watching, who you're there to monitor. So private investigators are still governed by privacy laws, security laws, and probably the most important one for our industry is the Surveillance Devices Act or laws. as they're called.
So can I just ask you then, Peter, I don't want to keep cutting across you, pardon me, if, well, I couldn't get, I couldn't go and bug anybody's phone, and I couldn't put a surveillance thing under the car so I knew where they were going. Are you, as a, I'm not going to ask you because I don't want to tread upon what you're doing, but is a private investigator allowed to do that, whereas I'm not allowed to do it?
Absolutely not.
Aren't you?
No, absolutely not. It's basically a federal offence, and it's taken extremely seriously. So, and in fact, private investigators are not even able to supply that equipment to a client, if you like.
Aren't you?
Not only supply, should not most definitely should not install that equipment as well.
Gee, that surprised me. I thought you might have had the exemption on that because of the job that you do.
No. And that's the point where people assume that you have powers, which can, of course, work to your advantage at times. but in truth, there's no real power at all. The only thing that a private investigator's license gives you is the ability to sit in a public place for, I guess, what you'd term an extended period of time, as long as it, again, falls short of being harassment or stalking, as you refer to. So you have to be there for a reason. You can be there for day in and day out. I think I haven't had too many of these lately, but I have had jobs in the past where you've sat for a week watching a consecutive 7 days watching a particular location, and it's a nightmare to try and stay invisible for a week.
I bet it is.
But Peter, I haven't had too many of them recently, thankfully.
How do you do that without giving stuff away?
Because you don't.
Well, you can't be there 24 hours a day, so do you have to have others sort of take over, or do you just...
Yeah, it's a rotation, and it's an art form in a way, but wherever you sit, you're going to be... I mean, people are going to know you're there. They're going to realise you're there, obviously.
Well, after 7 days...
Well, yeah, definitely. Look, it could even be an hour that people are starting to get a bit jumpy. So if that's the case, and this is what a private investigator is supposed to do, you're supposed to let police know if you're going to be at a certain location. But in real life, how it would work is if you sense that a neighbour or someone's getting a bit agitated and are pretty likely to be on the phone to the police, then you'd make a call in advance and tell them who you are and why you're there, give them your car registration and your mobile phone number, and basically then when the person calls in, then presumably police would say, yeah, we know what it's about, don't panic, kind of thing.
I've got to take a quick break, Peter, and sure. We'll come back with more.
Where do we go from here? This isn't where we intended to be. We had it all, you believed in me, I believed in you. Certainties disappear, what do we do for our dream to survive? slip away. You must love me. You must love me.
And that was Madonna and You Must Love Me. Peter, we've just had a phone call from somebody said that, you know, you're talking about the powers or the lack of powers that PI's got, and they said, well, why does a PI have to be registered if they don't have any more powers than, say, poor humble me?
Well, registered is actually licensed.
Licensed.
Under a subsection of the Victoria Police as our security guards. So it's through the same licensing bureau, the registrar in there. I think the main reason is that if you're there for a legitimate reason, you can't be moved on. And I'm guessing also if you went and knocked on a door for a legitimate inquiry... say for argument's sake, you might be doing a perhaps a motor vehicle theft or accident investigation, to give an example, maybe an arson or a burglary or something. Then you part of the normal procedure for the private investigator to prepare a report for the insurance company would be to approach neighbours and things like that. So again, if you're asked to leave the property, you've got to leave the property. There's no question of that. But I don't believe you can't get into any trouble for actually being there for a legitimate reason and knocking on the door, which goes back to, if you remember, there's been some laws brought in to stop people actually cold calling at front doors. So they're sort of the limited powers. I think common sense is probably the prevailing. If you've got a reason to be there and you haven't been rude or done anything untoward or broken in or trespassed or anything like that, then theoretically I guess you shouldn't be able to get into trouble and avoid that. I wanted to finish one quick point about the surveillance part of things, Alan, is people are very protective, as you'd expect, as to, sort of cars sitting outside their address and things like that. Yep. But what people probably don't necessarily realise is it is actually a public place. And in there's actually not a lot, whether it's a person's got a private investigator's licence or not, there's actually not a lot you can do to move people on until the point that perhaps police might ask someone to move on. And that sort of comes back to the harassment and stalking kind of scenario. Yep. So people do get very... protective, I guess the word is, of the parking spot perhaps outside their house or so. And sometimes, you know, you just sort of politely have to say to them, look, I'm here for a reason. You can ring the police and confirm that I'm here for a reason. And realistically, there's not a lot you can do about it, whether I'm upsetting your day or not. That's just unfortunate. So,
Peter, that just brings another point. Pardon me. Now, the normal... side street or the normal street we live in, really most of them don't have any limits as to how long you can stay there. What about, do you have any ability, if you were on a job and the whole street has got 2-hour parking, which some residential streets do, you know, there's the shops and the street behind, it's got parking limits so that people don't just clog it up with workers' cars and that all day. Do you have any ability as a private investigator, if the council come along and say, hey, this was 2 hours, I'm going to book you? Do they give you any leniency, which I think they should?
Yeah, so there's a couple of aspects there. One is that I've heard there's some sort of rule that if you're actually sitting in your car that you shouldn't be issued a ticket. Now, I've never actually seen that in law or in writing, but... Right. It's sort of a bit of a rule of thumb that you might use. So the plan B then would be to speak to the parking people and kind of explain why you're there and perhaps give them a business card and invite them to check with police if necessary that you're there for a legitimate reason, at which point they may or may not, at their discretion, move on to the next car.
So there's no guarantee, though?
Absolutely not. It's purely down to personality. and how you communicate with them and the nature of the person. They may see sense in it, or they may, you know, in their past life had a run-in with a private investigator and have a bit of a bent against them, so they're quite happy to issue a ticket.
Got caught out doing something they shouldn't do by a private investigator.
The third alternative, if it's not a ridiculously expensive fine, then you just let them proceed with what they're going to do, and perhaps your client might be prepared to pay you back for that expense, because, you know, you don't want to lose that particular vantage point. So that's the three aspects that I would look at. Fortunately, though, it doesn't come up very often, not as often as what you'd think.
Isn't it? All right.
No.
Have you got any other homework that you have to do, Peter?
I did have some other homework, but I kind of wanted to go back and just touch on what security guards can't do, Alan, which something of interest.
Yep.
So for your listeners, security guards cannot search you without your consent, so you have to give consent.
Oh, do
they? Cannot use unnecessary force.
Yeah.
They can't be racist or abusive. And basically, they can't do anything that a normal citizen can't do. So that goes back to the whole citizen's arrest type of thing. So if they were over exertive in restraining somebody, they could face charges in that respect.
I think that has happened a couple of times, hasn't it, Peter?
Yes, it has. And I was just going to say, just like police too can even face repercussions if they're a little bit overzealous. So I thought that was quite interesting, some of the things, and it reiterates again that there's really no extra powers, I guess, attached to either security guards or private investigators. Now, to sum up, someone had a reasonably good summation of what private investigators generally might get up to. One of them is conduct surveillance, which we've already spoken about, with the emphasis of that the origins of the surveillance is generally a public space. The only exceptions to that would be if you were working at for a corporate client, so perhaps in a factory or a retail shop or something, then if you've got their permission, then obviously you can be on their premises. Perform background checks, so that's basically do some homework on the magical Google machine and a few other databases to look at someone's history, verify identity, and check criminal records. To check a criminal record properly, you have to actually have a consent form from somebody, which sort of defeats the purpose in some ways.
I was going to say, they're not going to give you that, are they?
But having said that, there are obviously references that come up, as people know from their sort of Facebook history and even their general history, that search engines seem to retain quite a lot of information. So, and again, it comes back to getting the right person. So sometimes you've got to be very careful with that. You can't go and cost someone perhaps a job when you're not actually the person. You've come up with, say, some criminal history, but it's not actually that person.
Yep.
It might be someone with the same name or very similar name. So again, you've got to be careful. Finding missing persons, which I've done a little bit of over the years, but that's always an interesting one, tracing people that way. Cannot trespass on private property, which we touched on. Cannot impersonate a law enforcement person.
Well, none of us can.
Which is the same as sort of also saying that, you know, I'm a private investigator, you have to tell me kind of thing. You can't get away with that. And they also put one about hacking into personal devices. So, again, that's the whole gambit of attaching any sort of surveillance device at all. That's basically federal privacy law, and that's a big no-no.
That surprised me. I thought you might have been had the exemption on that, to be honest.
No, at the end of the day, from a private investigator, well, from my point of view as a private investigator, it's basically legwork. It's basically the surveillance is how you gather the information that you cannot obtain online. Having said that, they obviously can get some reasonable information online. A background, if you like.
Peter, I've just got to take another quick break and we'll be back with more.
Yarra Valley, FM 99.1.
Tried to read a dozen, tried to be something I really wasn't, tried to please you any way I could. It didn't do no good. Then I tried squeezing in the latest fashion, and my diets ran from Slim Fast to Atkins. Realized after Taco class, I don't wanna make you happy that bad. I ain't changing nothing just to have your loving. Yeah, I'm alright with who I am. I don't need to be a better woman, I just need a better man. One who sees all my flaws and imperfections and believes I'm exactly what he likes. That sounded like a little more my type. I ain't changing nothing just to have your loving. Yeah, I'm alright with who I am. I don't need to be a better woman, I just need a better man. Need a better man.
And I'm talking to Peter from Absolute Facts, as our local private investigator, and we've been talking to him about a few different things, but particularly about security guards as opposed to PI. Peter, one of the other things you're going to have a look at, whether theft from or of motor vehicles have escalated, because we seem to be hearing of motor vehicles being knocked off all the time, every night.
Yeah, sure. So I've got some Victorian crime stats for the year ending 31st of December 2023.
Yep.
And basically overall they're revising a number of recorded offences, so highlighting the recorded offences, rose 8.4% year on year, so from 2022 to 2023. Of that, incidents of theft rose 26,659 to a total of 174,719. That's in Victoria, mind you.
Yep.
Included in that, and the largest contributor, was theft from a motor vehicle, which rose 9,037 to 56,810, which I calculate is about a 16% increase. So just clarify, that was theft from vehicle.
That's now, from the vehicle.
Okay, so the next part then was, as your per your question, was what about theft of vehicle? Mm. And the Crime Statistics Agency saying there was 20,495 vehicles stolen in Victoria in 2023, an increase of 26% from the year before.
Gee.
So I think you won the bet, Alan, because theft of vehicle was actually a higher rising percentage than theft from vehicle.
Well, we hear about them every night, don't we, unfortunately?
Sure. And then, of course, the subsection of this data, which you've kind of alluded to already, was the number of cars being stolen had risen across Victoria, with a significant increase in thefts being carried out by children. So Victoria Police have issued a figure which reveals that car thefts by youths aged between 14 and 17 have jumped by more than 52.7%. I assume that's per annum.
Yep.
And in 2023, there were 1,703 car thefts by minors compared with 1,115 recorded in 2022. So you won the bet, Alan.
Peter, could you take on notice a question for next month? Out of those vehicles that are being knocked off, how many of them are getting recovered? Could you have a look at that for us?
Sure, the recovery percentage.
Yeah.
There's recovered and then there's recovered burnt out as well. So,
well, yeah, I mean, probably both of them if you could.
Recovered, written off or burnt out or whatever. Yeah. I mean, obviously with these tobacco store things, I think the car that's used in the crime and probably the getaway car both get torched, as it's called in the industry.
Yeah, so, I saw one the other day where they up in North Dandenong there where someone just backed it up, set fire to it and burnt the place down.
Yeah, exactly.
It's unbelievable.
Never mind.
Peter, I've just got to take a quick break. There's a couple of ads popped up which I need to take and I'll be back in about 3 minutes.
Sure.
Thanks.
It's been a hard day's night and I've been working like a dog. It's been a hard day's night. I should be sleeping like a log. But when I get home to you, I find the things that you do will make me feel just to hear you say you're gonna give me everything. So why on earth should I moan? 'Cause when I get you alone, you know I feel okay. When I'm home, everything seems to be right. When I'm home, feeling you holding me tight, tight, yeah. It's been a hard day's night and I've been working like a dog. It's been a hard day's night. I should be sleeping like a log. But when I get home to you, I find the things that you do will make me feel alright.
And I'm talking to Peter from Absolute Facts. Peter, a couple of things if you could take on board, please, for next month to have a look at. First of all, talk about court cases. And I know you don't always have to go to court, but without naming anybody or without... They'd like to know the most interesting court cases you've ever had to be involved in. Now, it may be divorce, I don't know. But whatever you thought was the most interesting case you had... Probably not the saddest. And also, another question from another listener was, when you go to court, do they accept you as a expert witness or are they? How do they treat you? So if you could have a look at that and, you know, whether you... I know some industry people are automatically looked upon as what they say is covered or is the judge or magistrate almost just about... accepts it because they are, in fact, an expert witness. So they want to know how you were treated in court, any times you've been, and also the most interesting court case that you've been involved in. Now...
Yeah, sure. No problem.
You want to talk about people pinching plants.
Yeah, so there was an article that, excuse the pun, pricked my curiosity, Alan. It was very clever headline that reads "Spike in Front Yard Plant Thefts," and the location of this was Croydon South.
That's in our listening area.
And the victim was actually a landscaper who had several native plants, including banksias and proteas, stolen from his front yard. The offender or offenders came in at 4:30 on a freezing cold morning and dug the plants out.
Why would you bother at 4:30 on a cold morning?
They targeted specific species, dug them up, put them in a plastic bag. And as he said, it wasn't the value of the plants. It was just the time and effort that he'd put into his garden. Yeah. So his garden was wrecked. The thief was caught on CCTV footage. I don't know whether that led to an apprehension or not. It doesn't actually say.
Doesn't? Yeah.
But apparently there'd been other thefts along the street as well. And the solution was he was going to replace the native plants with plants with spikes. So
cacti and all that.
To make them harder for people to pull out of the ground. So I thought that was quite interesting. And as you say, local to you.
And Peter, do you hear many of garden gnomes? Are they still pinching them, or have they gone a bit quiet?
I haven't heard about them for quite a while, but I had an interesting one many, many years ago that someone was losing garden gnomes from their garden and they weren't very amused about it. And it turned out to be a neighbour, of course, so it had to be someone close to it. But there was a bit of a neighbourhood dispute. So we got to the bottom of that basically by saying, well, who have you had a run-in with recently? And it turned out it was something about plants and fences or something. So the garden gnomes were being moved from one location to another. So the reinforcement of that, of course, as we've spoken before, Alan, about the about security lights and sensor lights and how useful or as a deterrent they could be. And then the next subject is a little bit of a something that we've spoken about in the past, Alan. It's to do with store staff being abused and confronted. And there was an article I picked up on. Saying shocking new data has revealed Victoria is the nation's capital for violent retail crimes, as retailers lobby for thugs who attack staff to be punished to the same degree as those who assault emergency workers, which, of course, some legislation came in recently to better protect emergency workers. So data released, Victoria had the highest number of retail crime events reported as serious, in inverted commas, in the past year, meaning that involved physical abuse, violence, or the use of a weapon. Victoria recorded 18,983 of these events.
18,000?
Yeah, and that's on a platform called Aura, which spelled A-U-R-O-R, which probably your listeners aren't familiar with, but the retailers basically input data into a common database called Aura, so that it's easier for them to keep tabs on these sort of incidents.
How was that spelled again, please, Peter?
Yeah, A-U-R-O-R.
Oh yeah.
Right. Yeah. So I have seen that in action, and it's a quite a good database, and it makes it easier for retailers to exchange information, but also to pass information through to Victoria Police so that they can perhaps see a bit of a trend or a pattern involving a certain person or persons.
Yep.
And the point about Victoria being the worst, Alan, was for the 18,983 in Victoria, New South Wales, which of course has got a larger population, only had 12,741 reported events.
True.
Yeah, so, yeah.
We seem to be the crime capital.
Well, it could also be to do with reporting as well. So you always have to take these things with a grain of salt. Maybe Victoria are more proactive in putting their information onto that particular database, because that's where the information is based on the database. And there was an example given about I think it was a phone supplier in phone repair business in Dandenong. And he reckons he's lost about 70,000 worth of stock in the past year for basically theft, just shoplifters. So 70,000 worth of stock for
a lot of money for a small shop business.
Yeah, for a small business, that's That's terrible. I think there was another trader referred to, a music store owner in Northcote who'd recently had 25,000 worth of guitars stolen in one hit, which leads him to having sleepless nights because obviously the financial pressure of losing 25K worth of stock wouldn't be pleasant for anyone,
Peter,
I wouldn't have thought.
Were both those mainly people sort of running in, grabbing a whole lot of stock and chuffing off, or were they breaking?
It doesn't tell me that, I'd say the Dandenong one's probably just sort of passing customers. I suspect that might be an accumulation.
Yeah.
Whereas the guitar one, I suspect that might have just been a one-off event, but it doesn't actually mention any more specifics than that. Oh, well, it did say the guitar guy said in one hit. So he lost 25K worth of stock in one hit.
Gee, that's like if you're running a small business, you just can't afford to lose that sort of money, can you?
No, absolutely. Absolutely identify with that sort of thing. So... there was another one that struck my curiosity too. We've spoken about this and touched on this about facial recognition.
Yep.
And basically the article saying that facial recognition is poised to become increasingly widespread in Australia, and that the public is woefully ill-informed about it. So this was research from Monash University and the Australian National University. Basically saying that 3/4 of Australians say they know little about the technology despite its widespread use by retail outlets, concert venues, sports stadiums and casinos.
Because there was a bit of a kickback, wasn't there, Kmart or someone brought it in, or one of the chains?
Yeah, they had to turn it off, I think, was the short answer there, which... You know, I think you can look at it from both sides of the fence. I'd be on the side of, I think you mentioned, if you're not doing anything wrong, well, why would you bother?
I don't care.
Why would you be worried?
I don't care if they photograph me when I walk in. I'm not going to walk out with stuff.
Yeah, and then it was to do with the consent law as well, that I think you've got to put up a sign or something, and then there was some to-ing and fro-ing about the sign and where the sign was placed and the size of the font and how many people actually saw it and things like that. So,
but do you think that's coming back in, though? Is that what you're saying?
Well, this article's saying that it's a fait accompli, I think, with the better technology, the digital technology. Cameras are getting better and better, and pixelation and all that sort of thing's not happening anymore. So, there's going to be there's cameras in the streets. So, what's the difference between a camera in the street and a camera in a store or out the front of a store? So, I think it's inevitable it's going to happen. And if you look at, the United Kingdom and the States for that matter, we're probably a little bit behind them in some ways as far as the coverage and the extent. And then, of course, Alan, you see the police, pleading for people to provide CCTV, whether it's from their car, maybe their car cam footage, if it's important enough, if it's been an accident or an incident, or even from their homes, if there's, been a series of burglaries in the street and that sort of thing.
Yeah, they go door-knocking and murders. Obviously, last weekend they were out door-knocking, looking for CCTV because of a murder.
Yeah, and I think it comes down to maybe the quality. I mean, we've all had a bit of a smile at some of the pixelated and granulated photos that have been put up as saying, do you recognise this person? but now I think they're starting to get clearer and clearer. But, of course, the crooks are awake to that, so they'll put on a baseball cap and a mask or something and try and, hide their identity that way. So it's an ever-evolving thing, but I think it's inevitable, personally.
Peter, unfortunately, I've got to go. The council connections people are here. Pardon me. So thank you for your time again, Peter, from Absolute Facts. I look forward to talking to you next month.
Sure. Thanks, Alan.